Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00002. Recorded on October 21, 2022. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Marlboro Man. Marlboro Man. Chapter 2.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
I told y'all somewhere along the way that I do, in fact, contrary to popular belief or common conception, possess an inner nerd, right? I do have that inner nerd aspect within myself. And some of the evidence of it is involving this very ancient, very early video game, a PC computer game that I had. My earliest recollection of it was the early 90s, but it was a game that was developed and put out like in the mid 80s, maybe even the early 80s. It was a RPG role-playing game. It was a dungeon crawler type, and it was a text generated. It wasn't an action type of game like we have now with these first person shooters and 3D environments. No, it was none of that. The graphics, if any, were very limited. In fact, I played it on a old IBM like 280 or AT&T 286 or whatever the fuck it was. Floppy disk to floppy disk. It didn't even have a hard drive. The monitor, it was a monochrome screen. Amber in color. We're talking old school PC stuff across the board. So yeah, my inner nerd, not only does it exist, it's actually antiquated, right? He's an old dude. He goes back some. So anyway, the name of the game was Wizardry, right? Wizardry, like a wizard with a R-Y at the end. Wizardry. And you know, as an RPG, I like it. Role-playing game, I like. What I like about this game is it had like the war party element to it, right? Instead of it just being you against all the enemies, against all the monsters, you had an actual group of people that you managed, right? So you really weren't a character yourself. You were kind of just like this person who managed a group and made decisions for an entire collective, right? I think it was six people in a party. I think it was six in a party. And all the people in the party, they had like different qualities, different attributes that made them better at certain things, made them capable of certain things that others weren't capable of. And you took these characters from kind of like a basic starting point and would develop them over time. They would gain experience and they would gain more ability, right? And I just thought that was very cool. You know, it's the game is basically, it's text, you know. Text describes the scenery that you walk into. There is very limited graphics. It's a dungeon crawler. You're walking into what they're trying to present as a 3D maze, right? But it's, you know, flat out 2D. Whenever you walk into something or there's some kind of encounter with other creatures, text will explain to you what you are witnessing, and then it'll give you options, and then you respond by making choices. You get into these confrontations, these combat melees, and you have to decide how to unleash the characters of your party in order to annihilate the problem in front of you, right? So they had a variety of characters. They had like races, like gnomes, and I forget. There was a human, gnome, maybe an elf. I'm not sure. I'm just guessing at this point. Dwarf, and they all had like different strengths based on their racial composition. But you could make any character of any race into any class, right? And the classes were things like fighters, thieves, right? Fighters would be guys with the sword and the shield and all the armor, and they'd go up front and then hack the fuck out of everybody. You know, they were just expert fighters, warriors. And then, you know, thieves would go around and you'd find treasure. A lot of it would be locked up in chests. So the thief was skillful at, like, picking the locks. That was his deal. So you brought that kind of guy around in a party to make sure that you were getting as much loot out of all your bother that you can do, right? Because that matters, because then you can buy better armor and better weapons and all that shit. You had priests and you had mages, right? These, like, spellcaster types. The mage was like the wizard type of dude, right? The kind of wizard that you would think of when you think of a wizard. I mean, he had all kinds of limitations. He couldn't wear like normal armor, shields, and shit. He can only wear robes. And as far as weapons, he can only carry a staff, you know, a big old stick. And then the priest is a combination of mage and fighter. He's somewhere in between. He could wear limited armor, and he could use limited weapons. He was allowed to use like an anointed flail, all right, a flail and a mace. He couldn't use sharp edge weapons, and that's interesting, right? That's interesting to me. And let me tell you why. Let me tell you where I'm going with all this, right? There was a couple of other elite classes that you could develop these characters into as you went along, but it was really just the idea that you could you know, manage a party like this and have all these decisions to make. Like these spellcaster types, they would cast spells. The priest, you could cast a spell or use them to fight, you know? And you could have as many fighters or priests or mages as you wanted. You would have to find the best balance to get things done, you know? So, what's interesting is with the priest and the mage as the spellcaster types. Now, like, if you listen to me at all, you know I'm Orthodox. And if you know anything about Christian Orthodoxy, Eastern Orthodoxy, you know that our priests, our bishop, our bishops, our clergy, right, or clergy in general, they look like a bunch of old wizards, right? He's got some kind of funky hat on their head, and they got the long gray beards, and, you know, they're wearing robes. And here's something that you might not know. As far as armaments are concerned, they're only allowed to carry blunt weapons. They can't cut you, they can't stab you, they can't shoot you. They're only allowed to walk around carrying, just like in this game, a staff, a stick of some sort, right? In fact, I'm going to purchase a little weapon for my priest. And it's who I'm getting into right now, right? Yeah, it's something. It's like so much of these spellcaster characters in this old video game resemble Eastern Orthodox clergymen, mostly like the mage, right? But they're called priests. And the elite character that develops from the priest is a bishop, right? And that's exactly how the hierarchy works. You go from priest to being a bishop, right? In the Orthodox Church. So we have, you know, we have our own, basically, you know, our own personal level 33 priest, mage, wizard, sorcery dude in our lives. I say our, me and my wife, our marriage, our, you know, our lives together, plus everybody in our church, you know, most of the people that we're friends with now, we have our own personal level 33 priest, mage, wizard, sorcerer dude. And I think that's just the coolest thing. And he's a cool guy. He's actually young. He's not the long gray beard, white beard type. He's got a middle red beard right now. He's early to mid 40s. He's a Generation X dude, but he's like on the young side of the Generation X. Me, I'm on the other side, the old side. And but we have a lot of common interests, like in music and things like that. And you know, it's funny. He'll come out wearing a cowboy hat every once in a while. Most people in our church do not. Most people in DFW do not. You know, I'm that rare bird that wears Western clothes in every situation. And this all comes together now in this story. There were a couple of weekends ago. And within that same time, during the week, there were really two episodes involving this element called masculinity, right? Our priest is teaching a class about sexuality within Orthodoxy and the gender roles, you know, the femininity, the masculinity. He's teaching classes on this stuff during the week, and then one of these two weekends ago, he had mentioned he spoke to the fact of masculinity. So it's something that's obviously on his mind concerning him, and he was presenting it before the church at the end of one of his sermons. I think I'm sitting back there, I have my spot in the church. Now, I'm the cowboy guy, right? I'm the, like I just said, I come to church and I got the hat and I got my boots and the jeans and the belt and that, you know, all that. And I'm always that way. And that's normally me. In fact, when I go to church, I even wear a, like an old river a steamboat gambler type of vest. You know, it's like a silk back, and then it'll have like a pigskin front, like sort of suede, but not quite. You could call it suede. It's just pig suede. And, you know, I got a black one, I got a tan one, I got a brown one. And I have to wear those when I go to church to conceal carry, right? So I do security work there and everywhere. Wherever I am, I'm the security guy or a security guy. It's just in my nature, right? It's a part of who I am. I've always got my eye out for what the hell's going on. And here's the key. I've always got my eye out to defend the innocent, to look after the women and the children, you know? And if there's a scuffle between men, who's innocent, who's not? Stop the scuffle, figure out who's right and wrong, and if somebody is being violent, stop it. Right? That's who I am. So that's what I'm doing. And in the church now, I have like a sort of kind of a reserve seat. It's unofficial, but people know. You know, people have learned over time that this is kind of a place where I station myself to do this kind of work. And I share that seat with others. And we kind of swap around. And I don't want to get into all, you know, I can't get into all the details of it all. But that's what I'm doing back there. So I got my seat. People know I'm there. The priest is up front doing a sermon. At the end of the sermon, he brings up the topic of masculinity. So he's talking about masculinity. He's talking about how the culture is right now, how it's trying to drive masculinity down. And he is encouraging the Orthodox brethren in front of him to go forward and go strongly with their masculinity, to not be doubting themselves as men, as the TV seems to be requiring us to do. And I say seems to be because I don't watch TV. I just get the hearsay, right? So he's doing this. He's speaking about masculinity. He's talking about, he's talking with encouragement. And he's talking about the culture. And then he says this. He says, to wrap it all up, he says, so when you get up in the morning, grab your cowboy hat, grab your cowboy boots, and go into the day the most man you can be, right? And when he said that, now he's making an expression of masculinity, but he talked about all this Western wear. When he said all that, all the heads in the church just like turn back and look at me where I was sitting. And it was a great moment. You know why? Because I'm doing everything I can do to fulfill my natural disposition and also fulfill my role as an Orthodox Christian. And right there was some sort of very weird acknowledgement of it all. I don't know if I'm expressing that well, but it was just a great little stupid moment in my life, that stood out. And that the rest of it is during his classes, right? He did a YouTube video that I saw, and he did one, in these lines, he did a whole lesson on masculinity. I watched about 5 minutes of it, just in passing. I kind of stumbled on it. And in those first 5 minutes, before we even got anywhere. Now, him and I have had these conversations. I understand my role, and I understand the gender roles as far as it goes in the Orthodox Church, right? So I'm good at it, and I've not bothered to go to the class. I saw this part of one class online, the one about masculinity. He opened it up by saying, before I teach you anything about masculinity, I'm going to ask you, what comes to your mind when you hear the word masculine, right? And nobody, because this is the way people are, nobody raised their hand, nobody blurted out. Everybody's a little, I've seen that in these classes. When I used to teach them, classes I've been attending at the church, nobody wants to speak up. But finally, somebody spoke up, and you know what they said? First thing that comes to mind when they hear the word masculine, they said, John Wayne. John Wayne. What are they saying, right? When they say John Wayne, they're saying cowboy. John Wayne was predominantly an actor in old Westerns. Now, he had some military type of roles and other things like that, but he was predominantly a Western actor. And he's known for that. He's known as a cowboy. Other people said things like Sylvester Stallone. And when they said that, another actor by name, the priest would jump in and say, oh, Rocky, boxer. And then somebody else said Chuck Norris. And he said, law enforcement and martial artist, another fighter. And here's what you're getting here, right? You're getting a bunch of fighter types, really defenders and guardians. But first and foremost was this cowboy. That was the first thing that came up, right? It was the cowboy. So, people call me cowboy all around here. That's my road name, as a biker in the biker community around here. People know me as cowboy. Some people at the church call me that. And I get a little bit of that in most places, most corners of my life. It turns out that I'm more, and it's regrettable, but more like a pseudo cowboy, more like a cowboy in a very slow training process. It's almost as though becoming a cowboy is kind of in line with my walk of righteousness. As I become more and more holy, I become more and more cowboy. And, you know, that might sound weird or funny or something, but there's a lot of truth to it, because a lot of the cowboy thing is more of an inside job than an outside job, right? And I'll get into this more, hopefully, as we go along. That's not the point at the moment right here. People recognize a cowboy hat and a cowboy boots, and they automatically, I get it from little kids all the time, you know. Oh, is that a real cowboy? You know, they get really excited about it, and it's something to behold. And women always kind of, hey, I like that hat. And they give you goofy looks on their face as they're passing by. When you make eye contact with them, you could tell what's going on, you know. The masculinity thing, right? There's a masculinity. But for me, it's like my quote-unquote cowboyness is, it's in process. It's a developing thing. There's a saying in Texas, all hat, no cattle, which when it's used properly, it really means it's about talking the talk and walking the walk, you know. It's about being genuine in general. Right now, when it comes to all hat, no cattle, like I got the hat and I got no cattle. So in a very literal sense, I kind of fit the idea, the premise as inauthentic. But that's not really the point of it, you know. That's not really the point of it. I'll give you a for instance or two, you know. For instance, you got a cowboy who's authentic. He's got cattle, right? He's herding them, and he's driving them across the state. A couple of rustlers come by, shoot him down, leave him for dead, and run off with all his cattle. Now, he ain't dead. Manages to pull himself together, limp across the desert, and he survives. Does he stop being a cowboy because he's got no more cattle? No, obviously, cowboy is more than just the possession. It's more than the positioning. So it's a saying, and it's, you know, it's on the same lines of you talk the talk, do you walk the walk? You know, can you back it up? Can you back it up? And so yeah, in the literal sense, I don't have cattle, and. Man, but I was really close. I was really close at one point to being an actual cowboy. It didn't work out. It was that family situation back in Tennessee, and I was charged with developing the livestock situation, and I was starting small with the chickens and the goats, and I was going to move up to the pigs, and I was already doing a lot of studying about the cattle, steer, cows, all the different breeds, all the purposes for the different breeds, what would be most suitable to our situation, you know, making decisions like that. But, you know, I had a problem with this, you know, 18 months, it was a real struggle. There was all kinds of difficulties. And in the end, I had, the basic interpersonal problem that I've always had, and that is the inability to get along with douchebags. And that was the end of it, you know? That was the end of it. I tried and I tried and I tried. I was really close to becoming an actual cowboy working with cattle, and it kind of dissipated, you know, right before my eyes, right within reach, and it was gone. And it's, I still want to do that. I still want to do that work before I die. And I am keeping myself lean and light and in shape, and I am improving my health regardless of the fact that I am aging. And if there's ever an opportunity for me to do that, I'm doing it. Okay. And in the meantime, I wear Western clothes. Now, the clothes don't make me a cowboy. All right. What makes me a cowboy is what I was talking about, the inner stuff. And even that I'm developing. But there's a whole list of traits, all right? The inside traits that go with a cowboy in the culture. And, like, I don't live in a place of cowboy culture. The cowboy culture in Texas is West Texas, right? You go to Fort Worth and beyond, You know, that's like the line. You draw a north and south line up and down through Texas at the Fort Worth and go west of that, now you're in cowboy country, right? And the culture is a little different over there. Here, we're on the Blackland Prairie, right? And it goes down to, it meets up with the coastal plain eventually around I-10, you know, getting San Antonio to Houston. This territory, it goes, you know, I don't know, Oklahoma, I don't think is Blackland. I think it's red dirt. But it's the same basic fauna and flora, you know, and the same layout of land and everything. And it's just a very big space of prairie, mostly flat, kind of rolling, you know. And then East Texas is the Southeast, you know. That's the redneck, the southern, well, the southern, you know, just southern boy. Here in the prairie, it's kind of a combination. We're kind of stuck between the two. It's kind of redneck cowboy mishmash. There are differences between the two, but here you have elements of both. And like you walk around here, like I'm the guy with the cowboy hat, right? Your average ordinary dude walking around, you know, your blue collar type of dude. He's wearing a trucker cap, a t-shirt. He's wearing a Western belt, Western jeans, Western boots. That's your ordinary guy walking around, right? But he doesn't have the cowboy hat. Everybody's got a cowboy hat, but they wear them only at certain moments in time. Me, I wear them all the time, and I never wear a trucker cap. I don't like them. I was a trucker. I didn't wear a trucker cap. I was a baseball player. I didn't wear a baseball cap. If I did, I wore it backwards, you know. I didn't care for the hat. It just wasn't my thing. But I wear the cowboy hat, and that's me, right? So people see me. I stand out. I stand out, and I appeal to them immediately as a cowboy. And so what's the big deal about that? Well, what we're talking about here is really the masculinity factor of it all. Now saying, you know, just the initial response of people in the classroom upon hearing the word masculinity, their first notions is a whole list of dudes who are fighters / guardians, right? They're fighters, guardian type. And like I told you, that the cowboys appeal to women and children, like I expressed. Why? Why would that appeal exist? Well, because the cowboy is in that group of types of men who are fighters and guardians. They're sort of kind of different, you know. Their role is about the job that they do. If you look at Chuck Norris, for example, and you equate him more with his role as Walker, Texas Ranger, right? A Texas Ranger dude, who are special people for sure, you know. I would love that job. I wouldn't have when I was a kid, but looking back, it's like, yeah, I would have liked that job. But anyway, you're looking at him. He's a guy who's in law enforcement, right? His job is not to go out and like start fights and prove himself to everybody. No, his job is to keep the peace, defend the innocent. And that's what you're dealing with. You know, you look at somebody, Sylvester Stallone becomes equated first and foremost with his role as a boxer. Now, the boxer is fighting for a living, right? That's like the martial artist. They are going to do competitive fighting. That's not the same thing. You know, that's not exactly what jazzes women. It's the defense, the ability to defend them and protect them and keep them secure. And then you get into providing for them on top of that, right? So the cowboy and the law enforcement guy, they represent all those aspects, right? Because, first of all, it's the jobs that they're doing, so they are providing, right? But then their nature is protection, defense, keeping the peace, keeping everybody safe, right? And then you get into more masculine ideas about providing discipline for the children and The women need a discipline too. You know, that's just a fact. Because why? Their emotional bent needs to be kept in check. This is part of the balance that men and women do with each other, right? The men keep the emotionalism of women in check, so they don't run off making rash decisions that are unwise based on knee-jerk reactions, emotionalism. And at the same time, what the women do, they keep the men in check from what? From the men's the masculine quality of being courageous and even violent, right? This guardian nature, this protector nature, has that element of violence built into it, of fighting, of conquest. And if you let that go awry unchecked, you end up with a violent person who starts bullying and tyrannizing the family, right? The kids, and everybody's in terror now at this guy. So the wife's role is to reel that shit in. While the man's role, the husband's role, is to reel in the woman's emotionalism. And we keep each other at a balance. We have a balanced marital situation, and then the kids beneath it end up being balanced, and they get the love and nurturing that they need from the feminine element, and they get the discipline and protection that they need from the masculine side, and it works very well. And that's the nature of things that is being intentionally attacked here in the United States of America for the past 100 years in an effort called cultural Marxism, which I encourage you to get on YouTube and look up, watch a video, understand the history, and see exactly what is going on right now. And recognizing that what is happening culturally in our society at this day, which everybody knows is very weird and peculiar, is being done with intent. Okay, but that's a different story. Look into that for yourself. I encourage you to do that. Back to masculinity, right? Fighters, guardians, cowboys appeal to women and children. You got these different roles and the gender. You get the balance that comes as a result of it. So when you think about a cowboy, what do you think about, right? Obviously, he's masculine, and he's got these inside interior traits that I'm going to get into in a moment. But just like the exterior look, you look at a cowboy, what do you see? Like I said, the hat, the boots, the jeans, the shirts, the belts, and then there's like all kinds of cowboy stuff. There's a good song by Waylon and Willie, right? Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, they did a bunch of duets. They were buddies and shit over the years. A couple of Texans, and one song they did together, Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys. And in the lyrics, as you go through the lines, it talks about a lot of cowboy stuff. You know, Waylon, when he would do the song solo, he would sing Willie's parts by pinching his nose and making fun of Willie, right? When Willie would jump in, pinch the nose, and you go, Lone Star belt buckles and old faded Levi's, right? So there's two things right there. Lone Star belt buckles. Your cowboy usually has that big brass belt buckle. And I guess back in the 70s, it typically had just a Texas Lone Star on it. Now they got all kinds of shit. And I still don't use those types. I just use normal belts, regular belts. I don't get in with that big buckle thing. But I probably will eventually. Maybe that's part of what I still have yet to work my way up to, internally and externally, there's more to a cowboy hat than you would know if you don't know about them. There's more to the boots than you would know. It's just more to this stuff. I don't need to get into all that, I think, at this point. But, you know, some of the other things that come up in the song, old pickup trucks, they often like play acoustic guitar, they sing, they'd rather give you a song than diamonds or gold. You know, there's a suggestion that the cowboy isn't exactly well-to-do, inherent in his description, that they're kind of rogue in a way. You know, it's, you're not looking at the rancher guy. You're looking at the ranch hand when you're talking about cowboys, at least as far as that song is concerned. And, you know, they tend to be loners, independent. And I'll get into some of those more internal qualities. But, this is some of the shit that we identify cowboys with on the external look, you know. There's a Waylon and Willie. That's a thing. It's like, you ever hear of Beatles or Rolling Stones, right? Your old rocker. It's like, what type of person are you? Are you a Beatles person or are you a Rolling Stones person? And that meant something, because way back in the day, the Rolling Stones were the bad boys and the Beatles were like the clean-cut ones. They're all bad boys, all right, in their own way. Well, if you ask me, I tell you all the way, I was always a Rolling Stones guy. I hate the Beatles. I had a period in my life, like I was 15 years old, 16, 15, that I was a Beatles fan. But what I really was a Peace fan. The idea of just peace, right? And this is, I was going into my little hippie phase, just peace in general. Not just as a matter of war, but as a matter of being, like living in peace, being tranquil, being serene, as you hear like in 12-step programs, right? The serenity, you know, living that mattered to me. That was like a driving, guiding principle that, frankly, I was never really to obtain until I was well into my walk of faith in Jesus Christ. Now I have tranquility all the time. I mean, always. It's hard to get me rattled. I'll get a little pissed off in traffic and shit like that, but I quickly just return to my base place, which is serene. Serene used to be a place I had to venture to, journey to. Now it's just, that's kind of like where I reside. That is my home base inside of my being. Anything not serene is what's weird and peculiar. It's great. But as a result, you know, I was familiar with John Lennon's push for peace, which was more the world peace type. And I thought that was a good thing. And as a naive kid, I didn't understand what a fucked up person he was. But eventually I would. And I don't like him at all. And his music sucks. You know, it sucks. You take away any significance in the meaning of it, and just standing on its own as arranged, organized sound, it's fucking garbage compared to so many millions of other things you could choose from. But his presence on the Beatles is so powerful that I just can't listen to the Beatles at all. Rolling Stones I could tolerate. Do I listen to them? No. I got like one or two Rolling Stones songs downloaded on my phone. You know, I like a bunch of their songs, and they're actually good. You know, the old stuff from way back is really, really good music. But again, the personal stuff. When you start to know the personalities in these bands, it's hard to be a fan of them, to spend your money on them. And so that's kind of where I'm at with that. And so let's just say I'm neither. I'm not Beatles or Rolling Stones. So then the question here in Texas, are you a Willie guy or are you a Waylon guy? That's more interesting to me. Now, I'm clearly a Waylon guy. Hands down, no doubt about it, right? Willie's a little bit, you know, with the weed, and he's a little bit out there. And you know, Waylon had his drug problems and everything, but when he put that shit down, you saw what the kind of guy he really was. And I'm more like that than Willie. There was a time you could have flip-flopped it going back. But again, Willie's more than just liberal weed smoker type like that. He's also a little guy, right? He's a little dude. Waylon was a big guy. I'm a big guy. I relate more with that. So I'm a Waylon guy when it comes down to it. You know, another thing about cowboys, though, is we all relate in our culture cowboys with cigarettes, right? They always be smoking. They would roll their own, but eventually they became equated with Marlboro cigarettes specifically, and that was actually intentional. See, I was born into this shit. It had already happened long before I was alive, and it was already kind of the social norm. the association between Marlboros and cowboys. I think it started in the 50s. It was actually a marketing push. They were marketing a filtered cigarette, which it was a new thing in those days. See, to me, I was born, and filtered cigarettes, as far as I was concerned, they came from the time of Noah. They just always magically were. That was what a cigarette was. It was a stick of tobacco with paper and a filter. And then you had those odd ones that didn't have the filter on it. But it was the other way around. It was the unfiltered ones that pre-existed. And then these filtered ones came along. And when the filtered ones came along, they were regarded as very feminine. I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. In fact, when I started smoking Marlboro. And Marlboros were the badass cigarette to smoke because they were much heavier than anything on the market. You know, they were even heavier than a lot of the non-filtered ones. That was a rough cigarette. And I smoked a lot of them in my life. I smoked for 32 years, and I was Marlboro from beginning to end. So you had the Marlboro man, though, was the marketing strategy that was brought forth, right? So you had the cowboy out there, you know, racing around on the horse and doing all this rugged shit and kicking up dust and sweating, you know, and he gets off and he's got his cowboy hat on and his, you know, he looked like John Wayne out there. And a lot of these guys that they hired to be the quote-unquote Marlboro man were literally cowboys. They went out in the field and found an actual cowboy, and then they would do these ads. Most of them were print ads for magazines and shit, but eventually they'd become television ads. When I was a little kid, I remember Marlboro television ads and shit. And you don't see anything like that no more, and it's been a long time. But yeah, you had the Marlboro, and there was a lot of different ones over time. I mean, there was a couple of periods where you had that one guy, and I don't know their names or anything like that. I'm not a fanboy of all this shit. They were marketing that filtered cigarette, and they were changing the imagery of it from feminine to masculine. There's that word masculine again, right? And they were trying to appeal to the men and get the men to buy those cigarettes. And it worked. I don't know how it worked, but it worked. It happened before my time. I just kind of felt... I did not smoke Marlboros because cowboys did. At the age of 13, I could give a fuck about cowboys. It didn't mean nothing to me, right? It was just the first cigarette that somebody stuck in my mouth. We had a little farm, a little hay farm outside our sub-development. And I don't know, 10, 20 acres. And they had a guy, a child, a son, a year or two older than me. And every once in a while, you just end up hanging around. Kids do. They just kind of wander around the neighborhood. They run into each other. And I was hanging around with this guy one day. And we were up in one of their back barns far away from the house. And he had a pack of cigarettes that he got from somewhere. And we just were smoking them back there, you know. Now, he was already smoking, and he was basically teaching me how to, and it started like that. Next thing you know, I'm getting myself a pack a day, a pack a day, a pack a day. So, these cigarettes end up being not only associated with Marlboro men, but now these men's, specifically now, like the quote-unquote actors, whatever cowboys they hired for their marketing, they were actually Marlboro smokers, and like five of them or seven of them or something like died from some kind of smoking-related disease, some kind of lung cancer, shit like that, right? So they became, you know, one by one they went down, and the cigarettes started to become known as cowboy killers. Cowboy killers. And, It's kind of interesting because I got a little Marlboro irony, is how I think of it. I smoked Marlboros 32 years and I was no cowboy. And at the end, I had my last cigarette on the way to the emergency room while I was having a heart attack. And I just about fucking died for real, right? I started flatlining in the middle of the night after the surgery happened. And I had to be resuscitated. And I was. I'm not saying I walked into the light. It wasn't quite there. But I was right at the fucking edge, you know. It was a moment, you know. It was a moment. And I was all alone going through it when it happened. Anyway, so I was about dead there, right? So I wasn't a cowboy, but the Marlboros were killing me. But I was resuscitated, and I was brought back to life. And I swear, and anybody who was around me in those days, this is 10 years ago, 2012, like almost to the day, right? October of 2012, I had this heart attack and quit smoking. When I was resuscitated, and I began into my recovery from that moment, I was changed. My tastes in things were suddenly different. Now, I didn't have this sense of like a whole new life. I didn't mind dying. A big part of my Christian faith is not being afraid to die. And then that ties in with the masculinity too. It's the honor of giving your life for somebody else. Jesus Christ teaches that. Martyrdom is a big deal in the faith. A big deal. That is like your ticket to heaven right there. But you have to be a man of character to actually do this, right? To become that martyr. And something shifted in my character that changed my taste in things. It's really hard to explain, but people recognize it. All of a sudden, my interests were like, now I'm starting to get interested in the guns. You know, I had a gun or two around, but now I was like interested in that a lot. And things related to farming, gardening, you know. I had just a little plot of land in the backyard to do anything, but I was using it, right? And I started getting into doing yard work and, you know, like constructive type of landscape and small, inexpensive projects. But starting to get into, it's even hard to explain, fishing and shit started, you know, appeal to me. Hunting started to appeal to me. All this stuff that was completely non-Yankee, right? I was becoming a country person of some sort. Now I was saying, I would call myself a born-again redneck. Other people were starting to call me that, you know? It's like I changed. But initially, it seemed like it was a redneck thing I was becoming. You know, it's a transition, a sudden, sharp transition out of being a Yankee and becoming a redneck by a near-death experience. But the truth of the matter was I was at the beginnings of becoming a cowboy. Because as time has progressed, I've shown myself not to really be so much redneck, but to be much more cowboy. Am I all there yet? No. Like I said, it's an inside job. I'm a lot of the way there. There's certain things that need to be corrected. And my path to righteousness, you know, there's absolute relation between my holiness and my cowboyness. We'll see as we get along here a little bit more. But that was, you know, the irony that I'm talking about is that, like, Marlboro's almost killed me, and then I was born again a cowboy after that. So it wasn't a cowboy killer, it was like a Yankee killer. But then I come to life again as a pseudo cowboy developing, you know, in development. I'm not trying, it just, it is. It was never like, you know, I'm gonna be a cowboy when I grow. No, I am what I am day to day, and as the days go by, this is how it's adding up, you know. Again, inside job, wait till we get there. So it's like, yeah, dead Yankee, born again cowboy, my tastes change. In fact, you know, where my tastes are right now, I'm living in DFW, but you know where I want to go? I want to go to Amarillo or Lubbock or somewhere out there, where Waylon came from, right? And Buddy Holly. That is the desolate, most featureless landscape in the entire country. I've been out there. I mean, you could see for miles and miles and miles if there ain't nothing, you know, a town around. And the towns are all small out there. Lubbock is a small city. It's got a D1 school in it, so it's adequate. You got what you need. You're probably going to get a half-decent hospital in Lubbock somewhere. Amarillo, maybe, maybe not. But that's where my compass is pointing, you know. That's, I just, my drive. If everything falls into place right in the next couple of years, that's where I'm heading to, out there. And that is cowboy country, you know. That is agriculture and ranching, and that is it. And the way people roll out there is a lot more Western than it is over here. So that's what I'm thinking. And, you know, my wife is on board with that, too. We'll see how it all rolls out, you know. So like I said, being a cowboy is more of an inside job. You know, like these interior traits, honesty, you know, shooting straight, a straight shooter, says what he means what he says. Not fucking around. He might tell a tale or two, but you get down to it, he's shooting straight. It's all business, and let's get this work done, right? So honest, straight shooter, rugged guy, obviously, with the hard nature of the work, the dirty nature of it. He's a hardworking guy. He's disciplined. He's stoic. He's reserved. Meek. Meek is a great word. People mistake meek for weak. You know, like petty, sniveling, fearful. No, meek is the opposite of that. Meek is strong. Meek is strength. Meek is adhering to a moral principle in the face of your enemy. You're standing up for your principles, standing tall. And it looks like meekness because a lot of times, you know, it's calling on you to do something like fight, but your beliefs are saying don't. So you're going to have to sit there and take it. Like Jesus says, you know, somebody smacks you, turn the other cheek at them. Now, if you believe in Jesus, you have to pretty much do that. So you're applying a discipline that's relative towards your moral conviction. It takes strength, interior strength, to do that. You have to overcome your own personal pride, right? Now I think of it's a Pulp Fiction, right? Yeah, the character, I can't remember. Ving Rhames was the actor, right? Big black guy. He was talking to Bruce Willis, that character who was the boxer. And he's telling him that he had to throw a fight in such and such a round, and Bruce Willis was having a hard time with that concept. He just couldn't. He's a fighter, you know, like we're talking about fight. You can't just throw a fight. That's what you do. You're a competitor. And he had a hard time with it. And Ving Rhames tells him, that's just pride fucking with you. And so we have to come to understand where pride comes into our lives. Just like women have difficulty making decisions when they get all emotional, right? Men, though they're not so emotional, there are certain emotions that kick in that will drive them to make bad decisions, and pride is one of them. That's the old thing when you're a kid. What are you, chicken? You just touched my pride. Now I'm going to make a bad decision and beat the piss out of you, right? And you get done with that. There's maybe a little satisfaction, but in the long term, you're going to have regrets over it. There's apologies to be made on both sides for that scuffle even occurring. Anyway, you know, beyond, you know, stoic, reserved, meek, respectful, conscientious, faithful, independent, freedom-oriented, very country in their style mannerisms, not afraid to get dirty, polite in their mannerisms. See, and that's where I'm still developing. I do not have Southern or Western politeness in my mannerism. And, you know, cowboys generally don't cuss a lot, if at all. And I do. I cuss like crazy. You hear me here. I'm even trying not to when I cuss a lot, right? So there's parts of me that are a little rough around the edges as far as the interior cowboy is concerned. But I take these things very seriously. And eventually, if I am required by God to overcome some of this stuff, it will happen. God will see to it if I allow God to see to it, right? Not that I'm the boss or anything like that, but we do believe in free will as Orthodox Christians, right? That is definitely a theological concept that many other concepts are built off of, and we function as a whole as a result. But moving on, I'm still developing, so I'm not sitting here telling you I'm a cowboy or anything like that. I'm just talking about what happened at church one day, you know? and the masculinity, which seems to be the theme of our church lately, and that I actually represent masculinity to people. That's a great acknowledgement. I really feel good about that. I feel good about a lot of things today. That's definitely one of them. I got to say that on a spiritual level, like, cowboys are very similar to shepherds, right? In the Bible, you got shepherds leading the sheep, and that's kind of a recurring theme. But even Jesus becomes a shepherd, and then the sheep becomes what? Us, right? We Christians who follow the shepherd. And now, being a cowboy is similar to being a shepherd. You really just got a different sort of animal that you're herding around, right? And caring for and protecting. And it's an interesting concept when you look at it that way. You know, Jesus, well, could have been a cowboy in a different culture. If he had incarnated, right? There's another theological concept you ought to look into. Look up, do a search. Orthodoxy, incarnation. That is actually a very big deal. Doctrinally, theologically, Orthodoxy is not a humongous, quote-unquote, dogma type of faith, base of faith, religion. It only has two dogmas that it's built off of. One is the Trinity, right? Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And the other one is this thing called the Incarnation. And the Incarnation, as a fact, spawns off into a lot of things otherwise. You know, it's the basis for other kind of doctrine. Look at that. That's, if you're a Christian dude, or you're considering being a Christian dude, you want to take a look at that. It's a very important thing. I could say a lot about it right now, but I'm not about to. I'm about to wrap up here, actually. I'm still growing. I'm growing into my boots. I'm growing into my hat. Meanwhile, I'm shrinking, actually. I'm on day 6 of a 6-day fast right now, and I just got to make it another 18 hours, and then I get to break open and eat for a weekend. But I have dropped total weight in the past month, 20 pounds. And actually, in the past like 2-3 weeks, I've dropped 20 pounds, because the first 2 weeks of this plan of mine, I didn't lose anything because I overate at one point. But really, in the past 2-3 weeks, I've lost 20 pounds. But overall, I have lost actual body fat weight. I have dropped 11 pounds in 20 days. I estimate that I started out, if I was empty, you know, devoid of all fluid and shit and everything, around 188 in body weight. And now I'm down to 177. In pretty quick time, without exercise, except, you know, the exercise I get at work. I got a physical job, so I'm moving around, so I do a little bit of something, but I'm not like hitting the weights or on the cardio machine or anything like that. But again, I talked about different reasons why I feel good. This fasting and losing weight will make you feel good. I feel good. I've got energy. I've got gumption. I'm not dragging my ass at all. I feel very healthy, very vital. I believe my mind is firing well. I'm keeping my thoughts together as I speak to you here. I'm not really trailing off too much in any direction. Kind of keeping on point, you know? So it's like I continue to grow. I'm growing forward. I call it the path of righteousness, right? It's God's drawing us into holiness, drawing us into being Christ-like. So we keep growing, right? And I say never quit growing. Never quit growing. And definitely quit that knuckle fucking and be a man.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Arlen Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Arlen Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at postarlen.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@postarlen.com.